Good morning. It's so good to see everyone today. I think that this is going to become my favorite season in Ohio. I'm liking it a lot. I like the coolness at night. I'll let you know in a few days about the hot days. But I do like the cool. And the sort of ominous feel of autumn coming on is getting dark a little bit, you know, a little bit more, and you can tell. Aware that in parts of the world there are more flames than are needed, and parts that are much wetter than they're accustomed to. Aware that fear-mongering is rampant in our world and it's often hard to see goodness around us, we kindle this flame now to illuminate this space in this moment when we're here to be reminded that we're not alone, that there's strength in our community. And this is where we rejuvenate our spirit so we may go shining on through our days.
Some walls are made of stone. Sometimes we build our own. Some walls stand for years, and some wash away with tears. Stay safe and cold. Some walls are made of doubt, holding in and keeping out. If there's any hope for love at all, some walls must fall. Child inside. Some walls are made in fear, and love let go will disappear. If there's any hope for love at all, some walls must fall. How will you ever know what might be found? Tumbling down. If there's any hope for love at all, some walls must fall. If there's any hope for love at all,
some walls.
On this last Sunday of summer, we come together to share time and space in the fullness of our lives, to remind ourselves of the importance of looking beyond the surface. The poet William Stafford offers this: if you don't know the kind of person I am,
and I don't know the kind of person you are,
a pattern that others made may prevail in the world,
and following the wrong God home, we may miss our star.
For there is many a small betrayal in the mind, a shrug that lets the fragile sequence break, sending with shouts the horrible errors of childhood, storming out to play through the broken dike.
And as elephants parade, holding each other elephant's tail.
But if one wanders, the circus won't find the park.
I call it cruel, and maybe the root of all cruelty, to know what occurs but not recognize the fact. And so I appeal to a voice, to something shadowy, a remote, important region in all who talk.
Though we could fool each other, we should consider, lest the parade of our mutual life get lost in the dark.
For it is important that awake people be awake, or a breathing line may or a breaking line may discourage them back to sleep.
The answers we give, yes or no or maybe, should be clear. The darkness around us is deep. And so we are together, and so we shall be with open hearts and minds, and so we are not alone, and so let us worship. Our sense of God that arises in our thoughts and feelings may seem to be just ours, but it's the same God no matter where it arises. And we ask that God to help us be disciplined enough to go crazy in the name of creation, not in the name of destruction. To teach us to know the difference between oppressive self-control and liberating self-control. To awaken in us the power to do the half-right thing when it is impossible to do the totally right thing. And to arouse the wild woman in us, even if we are men. We either make ourselves miserable or we make ourselves happy. The amount of work is the same. May we remember all of the good news that is hiding in every moment. Did you know? Tunisia just abolished a decades-old ban on Muslim women marrying non-Muslims, because their president is seeking to secure equal rights for the country's female population. Ha, take that, bad news. Did you know JetBlue Airlines lowered their prices drastically for flights out of Florida when people needed to get out for safety? It's good news. Banks in Florida have eliminated millions of dollars of fees that would normally accumulate because of the mess that has entered into people's lives. Noam Chomsky reminds us that optimism is a strategy for making a better future, because unless you believe that the future can be better, you are unlikely to step up and take responsibility for making it so. If you assume there's no hope, you guarantee there will be no hope. At least half, and I would argue more, of our heritage is all about hope. We give ourselves and each other hope, not hell. And this is a time as much as or more than any to remind ourselves of that origin that we share. Amen.
Children, why do we build the wall?
Why do we build the wall? Build the wall to keep us free. That's why we build the wall. We build the wall to keep us free.
How does the wall keep us free? My children, my children, how does the wall keep us free? they should want. What do we have that they should want? We have a wall to work upon. We have work and they have none, and our work is never done. My children, and the war is never won. The enemy is poverty, and the wall keeps out the enemy. And we build the wall to keep us free. That's why we build the wall. We build the wall to keep us free. We build the wall to keep us free.
If you've listened to me very much, you've heard me mention many times that we're all in this together. Someday I'll tell you how I got that line from Robert De Niro, but it's an obscure reference. If you ask me about my thoughts on God, I might say God is a collaborative effort. If you ask me what ministry is, I'll probably say it's what we do together to become our best selves. And if you ask about worship, I might say that we collaborate together and build one upon another as we remind each other of our shared needs and desires to be of use. I'll tell you the source of this following another day. It's a statement of a premise that informs everything I do, particularly in ministry. And it was written a few years before I was born. Human beings are impelled, not compelled, by the power of God to fulfill the good potential of their lives. The impulse toward wholeness in humanity is predisposed to good, though it can be weakened or distorted by chaos and conflict. Authentic worship keeps it alive and restores its integrity. That impulse toward wholeness in humanity that is predisposed to good. We are here to keep it alive and restore its integrity week after week. But there's not just one way to do authentic worship. Today we'll do some speaking from up here, and you'll be singing us into shape. This will make sense in a moment. I had the pleasure of meeting and spending an evening with a couple of colleagues in Cleveland this week, one of whom has joined us today. The Reverend Peter Newport has, like many of my most interesting colleagues, no, like all of my most interesting colleagues, has a colorful and rich, oh, rich and diverse might sound better, might be colorful, and rich and diverse personal history. He may opt to say more, but picking through the bio he sent, I'll tell you this. He's a twice married father of a total of five who are successfully making their way through young adulthood. He's the first in his family to have gone to college, and he did it on his own, accumulating a Bachelor of Fine Arts in Printmaking and Photography, Master of Divinity in Parish Ministry, and five units of Clinical Pastoral Ministry, which is quite a few units of such. His professional life has involved work in higher education, parish ministry, pastoral counseling, including hospital and hospice chaplaincy, and a variety of ministerial functions in congregations from, I'll just drop in, I'll follow you to your congregation and say some stuff, like today, to much more intense and deliberate consulting, to interim ministry, something I know a thing or two about, to being a co-minister, including a seven-year service as co-minister with his wife. Now, although I can discover a bit from reading a short bio, and I can share that, what I can tell only from spending time with a colleague is their sense of commitment to, and devotion and congruity to this shared calling we have, and their act on principled ethics in human relationships, which is the core of what matters to me. Or you could just simply say, while spending the evening with the Reverend Peter Newport and the Reverend Mary Gregolia, I picked up a really cool vibe. It's the same thing. I could just tell. I'm always grateful to find colleagues who have valuable perspectives to contribute to the health of a congregation that I'm serving. We're colleagues, so even before meeting, we have some standards we can hold ourselves accountable to, and we have a mutual interest in our own form of authentic ministering, whatever that may be. So right now, we are simply discovering and figuring out how to contain authentic worship in this moment with these people. We're all in this together. So let's build something to hold us all together. You're going to sing one verse at a time of the song that's in the insert there, The Walls. It's a Jason Shelton song, and you'll have plenty of help. Hal and Vanessa are going to make this work well. You can start any time. Give us a little idea what this is going to be. And you'll sing, this is a separate page in the order of service. Yes, I see some of you have it. And it'll just be one verse at a time.
Building up, we are building up. We are building up the walls. Building up, we are building up. We are building up the walls to hold love in, to heed its call. We are building up the walls.
And that is what we do. In churches, we often feel a need to build our literal walls, to make our space concrete. And we make walls of our tenets or dogma, even when we say we're not dogmatic. From time to time, I think we all get a feeling that our walls have created limitations that aren't so comfortable on what's possible. But we're clever. We're clever people. Let's sing.
Sneaking round, we are sneaking round. We are sneaking round the walls. Sneaking round, we are sneaking around. We are sneaking round the walls to let love play, to heed its call. We are sneaking round the
I'd like to take a moment right here at the start to thank Reverend Johnson for this opportunity to share their pulpit. I wouldn't say that we were quite sneaking around the walls to let love play, but it is a rare and wonderful thing to meet a new colleague and to celebrate our craft like this, right out in front of God and everybody. The strictures, you know, of both ministry and retirement are isolating. It's good to work. It's good to work, even enjoyable to work together. And isn't the wall in question in this verse, the one that we're sneaking around, isn't the wall in question any excuse we can raise to get out of doing what we really need and care about? Resting in the comfort and support provided freely by friends and neighbors or colleagues. Too busy. Sorry, I didn't get back to you. Next time. There's also the sense, you know, that the wall is watching. If we're sneaking, then something there is that's watching. And aren't there always those expectations, commitments, arrangements, conventions, rules, covenants, guidelines that loom above the easy path to vex and disappoint each one of us as we seek to simply dreamy dream, lay our cheek against those cherished moments of joy and fulfillment. Few and far between. What is the feeling that arises in us when we are thus held back? What's the feeling that comes up? It's not a nice feeling. What comes up for us when we are frustrated in our approach or battered badly in the process? I'm reminded here of one of my favorite jokes. It's the one about the old lady and the Boy Scout. If you've heard it, don't tell me. You see, there was this guy walking down the street, and he sees an old lady across the street. I get to say old lady because I'm 70, you know, so nothing pejorative there. He says an old lady walloping a Boy Scout with this heavy leather bag, her handbag. Bang, bang, bang. A guy rushes across the street and, addressing the Boy Scout, asks, "What happened here? Why is she hitting you with her handbag?" The Boy Scout answers between blows, "I just helped her across the street." Bam, bam, bam. "What's the matter with that?" the man asked. "She didn't want to go." So how does the man feel in this situation? Tell me, how does the man feel? Confused. Yeah, like you, right? How's the old lady feel?
Angry.
Say? Frustrated. Yeah, she just wanted to go where she was going. How does the Boy Scout feel?
Misunderstood.
Misunderstood. There's a school of thought, and I should tell you, right here, a lot of the work that I'm quoting in this paper are from two psychologists. One's called Sylvan Tompkins, and the other one is Donald Nathanson, and they're both affect theorists. Affect theorists. So yeah, there's a school of thought which asserts that anytime we reach higher than our grasp, anytime we reach higher than our grasp and are disappointed, that failure, that wall between the individual and the positive affect that had powered the initial reach, will now trigger shame. It is experienced by the organism, Tompkins writes, it is experienced by the organism as an amplification, an intensification of impediment, difficulty. What affect had been powering motivating our attention in the first place is now turned off, and with that, the kind of neocortical activity associated with that attraction diminishes. In other words, when shame takes over, when we are disappointed, when our reach exceeds our grasp, when we are disappointed or embarrassed, it's a short step from feeling bad, breaking bad, and just one banana peel from taking on the false narrative that because I feel bad, I am bad. I must be a bad person. After all, look what I did. Look what I did. And everybody does. Sneaking around. Always a risky business.
Now we will pass through and peer through the wall. Ready? And passing through, we are peering through. We are passing through the walls. Passing through, we are peering through. We are passing through the walls. To know love's touch, to heed its call. We are passing through the walls.
The interesting thing, though, is that those walls come and go.
We pass along them occasionally, peeking through to the other side. In fact, as I was relating to Anya yesterday, where I come from in New England, it is not unusual to encounter walls in the middle of the woods. Really. There might have been one farm or on one side and another on the other, maybe, back when the land was first cleared. But now, second or third growth forest has taken it back, taken that land back. Frost comments upon gaps where even two can pass abreast through the walls. You could use the wall to walk along, perhaps, to try to find your way. But the wall might cant off in an obscure direction and leave you stranded. How would you know? How would you know? Times are changing, folks. Old ideas and constraints are passing away. These are perilous times, or as one wag put it, I think it was the recently forgotten General Shinseki, if you dislike change, you're going to dislike irrelevance even more. We got to snap out of it. We've got to snap out of it. What's the wall for, actually? If it's so undependable and permeable that you can pass right through it or peek over to the other side, what's it for? Is it history? Is it destiny? And more to the point, what is on the other side? More than just a forest, more even than love. One theorist of human experience has posited that there are six universal needs, human needs. There might be others, but these six will do. Certainty, significance, variety, we all need variety, love, growth, and contribution. You gotta belong to something. Sylvan Tompkins actually boils these six down to two innate affects. They're baked in. Innate affects, literally hardwired into the muscles and neural networks of the human face. And these and all the other human emotions are made from them. Tompkins' six, I understand them as myself, as three pairs, sets of three sets of two. Are interest or excitement, enjoyment or joy, and more neutrally, surprise or startle. Accompanied by six negative affects, which we'll explore in a minute or two, these innate affects illumine the signboard of our face like nothing else. Joy, interest, excitement. We can read it. That's why we have poker players with poker faces and big sunglasses and hats pulled down over their eyes. And three-year-olds, I just heard on the radio yesterday, who have infallibly figured out by age three who the cool kids are in daycare just by picking up on affective cues. Just by picking up on cues. They know who the aggressive kids are. They know who the whiners are. They pick it up immediately. And if you ask them again in another context with kids that haven't ever met one another again before, they'll pick out the same kids. Think it's any different for us, big people? Nope. As any dog owner can testify, Nathanson writes, our pets convey messages of the most remarkable complexity and combination of intention with a combination of intentional gesture and affect display. And we all know what they mean. Six negative affects are also wired in to this billboard we carry around on our faces. These are also derived directly from Tompkins' research with infants. He says, present from birth and plainly visible on the face of the newborn are distress or anguish, fear or terror, shame or humiliation, dismal or dismal or disgust or anger or rage. It's baked in. That's our expressions, our neurocortical network. It's in us all. So what is on the other side? Or is there a wall just so there can be another side? Just like that Donovan song from when I was a hippie. First there is a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is. Theologically, one might say, along with the prophet Micah, he has told you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God. What do you get for that? What do you get for that? All the good stuff I just mentioned. You get your needs fulfilled. Otherwise, sorry, I'm afraid you'll just have to make your way along with the rest of us in the emotional thickets we make for one another, feeling ashamed and out of sorts from time to time, occasionally stumbling onto distant glimpses of higher ground seen only from afar. But hold firm, you are not alone.
And to give love space, we'll sing Climbing Over. Ready? Climbing over, we are climbing over. We are climbing over the walls. Climbing over, we are climbing over. We are climbing over the walls. We are climbing over the walls.
It is a fact. We are all in this together. And that's the hell of it. But wait a minute, it's really not that bad. We don't wallow in one another's shame. My distress or anger belong to me, they don't belong to you. Well-individuated actors know where their emotional lives leave off and the life of the other person begins. And like Robert Frost and his taciturn neighbor, we might actually cherish that distance. I used to think that in spite of the incessant need to classify things, we're more alike one another and at the same time absolutely wonderfully different. Nowadays, I'm more apt to think about things like race, for instance, as though it was a medium, something we swim in, that dissolves us like watercolor or some other cultural mode of expression. But no matter, we are all wonderfully in this whatever it is, together, and that's the way it's supposed to be. Otherwise, we wouldn't be equipped with the affective intelligence that we have acquired over the eons of evolutionary time. Nathanson writes, one only has to watch the flow of laughter through an audience, or the flow of anger through a mob, to wonder how the normal human develops immunity to this contagion. How do we learn to remain ourselves in the presence of the affect of the other being thrown at us? How do we just not disappear into somebody else's emotional thunderstorm? These and many other questions may be introduced by the introduction, may be answered by the introduction of a new ego mechanism This is Nathanson writing, which I have given the appropriately paradoxical name, the empathetic wall. The empathetic wall. You'd think that, but anyway. In other words, we are able to monitor, each one of us is able to monitor from over here the affective transmissions of the other person over there, and to modulate, like turning a dial, our own responses to match. Pretty nifty. And we do it all the time. Here's the deal. We have to want to use this tool. We can sit behind our wall and let the world rage on. But we have to practice. We have to practice to get good at it, and we have to learn to be vulnerable. Facility with empathy, especially when dealing with the rawest human emotions, means not that we feel the other's pain, like I feel your pain, dude. No, it means that you choose to touch that place in you where a similar hurt resides, in order to honor the experience of another person. You have to learn to, it means you choose to touch that place in you where a similar hurt resides, in order to honor the experience of another person. Empathy is a shared blessing, a wound, a feeling freely offered from the depths of one's own experience, not coerced or made up for the occasion. Do you know what blocks empathy? Shame. There it is again. And do you know what feeds shame? Secrets, silence, judgment. The keystones of some of the most gruesome church fights I have ever seen. Secrets, silence, and shame. Right there. Brené Brown says shame and empathy are like two poles with a slider that runs between them. You know, like on your amplifier, right? On one end you've got shame, and on the other you've got empathy, and the slider, the thing that moves between the two, is vulnerability. Vulnerability, yours. Your vulnerability. And here's the beauty part. You get to move your own slider. You get to move your own slider towards the empathy end of the scale. But it's going to cost you. It's going to cost you, because vulnerability brings its own discomfort, its own pain. But with these tools, simple tools, we've got them all. You can climb right over that wall, over that empathetic wall, anytime you want. Anytime you want. So may it be. Oh, wait a minute. Here's another joke that I can tell you. I only know two. No, three. I know three, but there's only two that I can tell you from the pulpit. This is called the Zen hot dog vendor joke. Same rules apply. A guy comes up to the Zen hot dog vendor and hands him a $10 bill and says, "Make me one with everything." and he gets handed a hot dog with everything. Time goes by. Where's my change? The guy asks. Ah, said the Zen hot dog vendor. Change comes from within. And so it is, and you are not alone.
And so we must from time to time. You can sit down. We have a couple more pieces here. You'll have to stand up again in 3 minutes, but that's only 3 minutes from now. We must from time to time imagine or experience our shared lives and our shared ministry without the walls, without the boundaries and limitations, without the rules that we make. Something indeed there is that doesn't love a wall. And we can respond by moving through broken walls, interacting with more than ourselves. It's that simple in a way, get out of yourself. The only way to really be alone is to be stuck in your own self. So we move beyond the need for limits, even if just in moments, and we realize that there's greater hope in the world. This is the core of our religion. There is more hope somewhere. That we may live our lives in the spirit of and practice of abundance in all ways, I say again, amen. And I ask you to consider abundance and generosity as the baskets pass by in a moment. Also, if you have a green card to stick in the basket, well, do the math. There's a basket, there's a green card. I know that will work out fine. The contributions we collect on Sunday help support everything that happens here every day and the myriad of activities and people who help things happen at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent.
With a mind that holds a plan, with a hand that holds a key, with a heart that holds a dream, love reaches out. When a family's torn apart, when the street is all you have, when your faith begins to break, love reaches out. Love reaches out. Love reaches out. Here by your side, bringing you home, love reaches out. Through the pain your eyes have seen, the voices in your head, through the war you still endure, love reaches out. To the man who asks for change, to the mother and the child, to the elder all alone, love reaches out. Love reaches out. Love reaches out. Let us take this night to strengthen and inspire. Let love and compassion be the source to fuse the fire. If you find yourself in need, if you fear what lies ahead, if we forge a path of trust, love reaches out. Where hope replaces hate, where wounds begin to heal, where we all will have a home, love reaches out. Love reaches out. Love reaches out. Here by your side, bringing you home, love reaches out. And here's a paradox. There's more freedom in connecting to others than there is in being alone. So see if everybody can reach out and find a hand nearby to hold and feel the strength of community
the strength of sharing, the strength of connection. There's a lot to think about from today, and it's a perfect setup for the most magic, wonderful week of the Holy Year, which is High Holy Week. Next Sunday and the Sunday after are very special Sundays, and this is our chance to be prepared. First, we'll be noting New Year's, Rosh Hashanah, in the Judaic calendar. And in that time, we do an inventory of sorts. And there's so much to think about from today. Think about shame. Think about times we weren't as kind as we might have been. This isn't about punishment at all, by the way. This is about self-awareness. So prepare ourselves by thinking about how we've been, really, honestly. Note that our title next week is Flawed to Perfection. There is no expectation that we are anything other than that. Go in peace and return in love.